Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. We have a lot to share today about how to live a longer and healthier life. We're going to talk about how antioxidants, that's your vitamin C and vitamin E, could help protect against stroke-related increases in dementia. This is from the University of Oradea in Romania, published in Neurological Disorders, Drug Targets. We also have a lot of other articles, plus a Texas doctor from Midland, Texas, has found a cure for COVID virus. It's very inexpensive. It's off-label, meaning it's no longer patented. It's in the public domain. So for like $200 for the entire treatment, and it's safe. We're also going to talk about how the politics of Big Pharma has prevented us from using some drugs that, again, are inexpensive and condemning them. And yet three recent studies published just last week show that they work and are not toxic when used appropriately and in a timely manner. Also today, I'll be addressing some of the comments, just a few comments from people who just want the program to be about health. And I thought, okay, I'll be happy to address that because I've been doing the same format for 53 years, over half a century. And there's a reason why I choose certain topics. And I thought it would benefit new listeners, and we have a lot of new listeners, to understand why the program's laid out the way it is. And Richard Gell will be coming on as well. So we have a lot to share, and we begin always with the latest on health and healing. So what this is saying is this, that there's a tremendous benefit when a person's taking vitamin C and vitamin E and vitamin A on a daily basis, and especially following an ischemic stroke, because it helps protect against an associated increase in the risk of dementia, including Alzheimer's disease. So, what about if something helps you after you've had a stroke prevent dementia? Wouldn't it be reasonable if it's natural and non-toxic to help prevent that stroke? After all, vitamin C thins the blood. And one of the things that causes us to have heart attacks and strokes, well, there are several. There are about 23 different risk factors, but one of them is occlusion, another in the arteries, where the artery becomes damaged by highly acidic elements like alcohol. Alcohol damages in any amount your arteries, especially the sensitive lining of the arteries, the epithelium. And when that becomes, let's say, difficult for blood to get through, it can break off, and that break off of that little piece of artery can clog a vessel, and then you have a heart attack or stroke. If it breaks and goes to the heart, it's a heart attack. If it goes to the brain, it's a stroke. Either way, the diet of the average American is terrible. In fact, what I did back in 1972, we wanted to see whether or not the typical doctor's diet was one that would contribute to helping the blood flow or limiting it in some way. We took a group of people at the Institute for Applied Biology, volunteers, and we took their blood. And we took it before a meal. And it was normal. And then we had them eat the average meal, but not just any meal. We went around to about seven hospitals on the east side of Manhattan and asked doctors, what kind of diet do you recommend? So using their diet, what we call the doctor's diet, we had these people eat that. And within about an hour and a half after a meal, when you took a sample of the blood, it looked like a milkshake. There were strings of fat that you can see in the blood. Well, that's dangerous because that can cause a aggregation or coming together of blood vessels, red blood cells, and that can cause a clot. And the thinner the blood, the better flow it is. The better the blood flow to the brain and the extremities. And you want oxygenated blood. when you're having green vegetables, like, for example, if you were to have a glass of grapefruit juice, you would have a thinner blood. If you had a glass of green juice, you can really see the blood. I mean, it really oxygenates it. You're very red, vibrantly red. But when you have colas and you have sugar drinks and you have hamburgers, just the opposite. Because the blood is reduced in oxygen, it's flowing slow. So please keep that in mind. And so therefore, taking vitamin C thins the blood. It does what an aspirin does, but without the harmful effects of an aspirin, even a mini aspirin. So it's a good study. Now, the next study is from the University of Graz, which is in Austria, and it's talking about red meat, and we're talking about all red meat. It's linked to dementia with excessive amounts of iron limiting brain function. Remember, you get most of your iron from meat. And so when people are having the average American diet, they're consuming way too much protein. And the reason is that the body cannot store protein. Whatever you eat in the way of protein in a given meal, the body either absorbs it and utilizes it or has to eliminate it, a process called deamidization. And that creates two byproducts of excess protein, urea and ammonium, both of which are toxic. And that's why you frequently see people on high-protein diets. They have like a brain fog. It's because their body's extremely toxic and it taxes the liver and the kidneys to get rid of that protein buildup. So when you have a plant-based protein, like brown rice or hemp powder, split pea powder, the body doesn't have those large amounts of protein. But you don't need large amounts of protein. That's a myth. In fact, for decades, all of us who are athletes and grew up looking at Paul Anderson and some of these others from the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, they were big guys, but they were saying you got to eat meat three times a day and lots of it. In fact, one of my buddies I worked out with would eat huge amounts of meat. I mean, he was a big guy, 278 pounds. He was about 6'8". He looked like a tree, but he was always tired. And we didn't know. I didn't know. I didn't eat meat, but I would take non-fat dry milk powder. My eyes were always puffy. And when I stopped eating meat, then that went away. So we're eating the wrong kind of protein, and we're eating too much protein. And when you eat animal protein, you're getting too much iron, way too much iron, too much protein, taxing your liver, taxing your kidneys. And then that red meat can contribute to dementia. So quite simply is this. Eating red meat and not your fruits and vegetables can fuel Alzheimer's disease. Brain scans found dementia patients with excessive amounts of iron suffer worse cognitive decline, which is one of the reasons that in all the people I work with, I always suggest some form of chelation, meaning something that will take those heavy metals out of the body. So just something that we can, that's within our power. Remember, iron accumulates. And when it accumulates, especially in the brain, you're going to have cognitive deterioration, independently of brain volume loss. And changes in iron levels over time in areas called the temporal lobes, which are vital for communication, correlate with mental decline in those with Alzheimer's. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Radiology. Separately, from the University of Sydney, which is in Australia, published in the peer-reviewed journal Emotion, compulsive internet use by teens, which is almost all teens, is linked to emotional issues. A new study has found internet addiction in teenagers leads to difficulty regulating emotions. So that's why parents should give their children a set period of time that they can use these, and nothing should be around their bed, their head, because that's extremely dangerous. So that's important. Also, a closer look at the effects of cinnamon extract on cardiometabolic risk factors. This is from IQ City Medical College in India and published in the International Journal of Green Pharmacy. What they found is this. that cinnamon is terrific on all levels, and it can help you if you have elevated risk of diabetes, which a lot of people do. So have some cinnamon in your breakfast cereal or in a protein shake. Either way, it's good for you. And also, that from the University of Manchester in the United Kingdom, they found that a Cold War antiseptic has potential in a fight against drug-resistant germs and viruses. It's a little-known non-toxic antiseptic developed in the Soviet Union during the Cold War. It's enormous potential to beat common infections. That's according to the University of Manchester scientist. Now, write it down. Miramistin, M-I-R-A-M-I-S-T-I-N. And it can inhibit or kill influenza A, human papillomavirus that causes warts, coronaviruses, adenoviruses, and human immunodeficiency viruses, meaning HIV. The potion is much less toxic to human cells than conventional antiseptics, which are not good. So, and it can be used against Candida and Aspergillus species, and also kills bacteria, including Staphylococcus, Proteus, and Klebsiella, as well as the bugs that cause syphilis and gonorrhea. So isn't this interesting? Miramistin, M-I-R-A-M-I-S-T-I-N, it's still used in some of the former countries, the Soviet bloc, in hospitals and surgeries, mainly to treat wounds and ulcers. So it's not known anywhere else. Isn't that amazing? So let's say the conventional antiseptics contaminate the environment because they're toxic to microbiota in fish and algae and plants. And here's something it's not. So something new, something important. And finally, something that will help all of the soldiers suffering from a post-traumatic stress disorder, magic mushrooms. This is from a medical working group, and they said that a growing number of soldiers suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder are turning to magic mushrooms to treat their condition. Okay. There's a new book. It's called Medical Psychedelics Working Group. It's a consortium of experts and academics and researchers and policy specialists to begin lobbying for a change in the law so that scientists can conduct clinical trials. Good for them. I'll do one more. This is from Green Med Info, very good organization. And they looked at all of the research on ginseng, especially Panax, P-A-N-A-X, ginseng. Inside the ginseng, there are a group of chemicals called ginsenosides. And these are very powerful. You find them in the ginseng root. And they boost your immune system. They're antioxidants. They turn off inflammation in the body. They're anti-inflammatory. And this is the new research, and they can help with neurological disorders, even erectile dysfunction and fatigue. But they really are good for turning off inflammation. And we are a nation bereft of every kind of natural way of trying to approach turning off cytokine storms. For example, if you have arthritis, fibromyalgia, if you have lower back pain, migraines, you're suffering from pain all the time. But chronic inflammation is what you're always going to have when you have inflammation. Inflammation, then chronic pain. And so the ginseng can help reduce the inflammation. It can enhance brain function. It has potential neuroprotective effects, especially with epilepsy, depression, and Alzheimer's. And it reduces fatigue. In fact, there are placebo-controlled studies showing it's much better than anything else. And many studies showing that it helps with erectile dysfunction by increasing endothelial nitric oxide synthesis expression in an enzyme important for vascular health. That's all good. And it reduces the risk of diabetes, improves hyperglycemia. And one last thing from Kemen Human Nutrition and Health Sciences, they found that spearmint, an extract of spearmint, can enhance reaction time, focus, and agility. That's important. just 90 days with 900 milligrams. That's under 1 gram. And it made a big difference. So that's good. All good stuff. We're going to go to this clip for about 7 minutes because it's very important and you haven't heard it, about how a non-toxic drug that's been around a long time, it's even used in babies, has been able to cure coronavirus. Now, isn't this important? Because they're going to look, you just have to know that everybody in the establishment is not on this game. Hundreds of pharmaceutical companies are racing to get the drug to treat this and the vaccine to supposedly prevent it. I would never take any drug that they're going to recommend because I've seen what they've done with other drugs they've made promises on, and there is no such thing as a vaccine that can be shown to be safe and effective, especially when they don't have time for clinical trials and they're all rushing to that hundreds of billions of dollar pot of gold that's going to come from the first one that's on the market. So imagine you didn't have to have a vaccine because it was a simple drug. Here we go. Back in a moment. All brand new material.
I'm grateful you could be here, and I would love to just have you dive right in. Since I don't really know you, have you start with telling our listeners about your medical background.
Well, I've been practicing in Texas for 28 years. When Governor Perry started a new task force called the Health Disparities Task Force, he asked me to be on that task force. And the purpose was to give him advice so that all Texans can have access to quality health care. And that was a 2-year appointment. After 2 years, he asked me, would you stay on one more year? And so that happened year after year for a total of 7 years. And a lot of good things happened. But I also have been the medical expert for CBS affiliate in West Texas for over 20 years. And I do a regular weekly update on COVID on the Talk 550 AM talk radio in West Texas. And we've been doing that since the beginning of this drama.
Wow, okay.
And so I'm also an author and do medical missions in other countries. And so I've seen a lot of disaster all over the world. But I wanna say, echo everything that you said in your first 5 minutes, I agree 100%. There is, we already have an answer for this. And to put things in perspective, let's look around the world. You know, in the country of Taiwan, there's over 25 million people. They're stacked on top of each other. If they did social distancing, they'd be out in the ocean floating around.
Yeah.
There's not enough room for them to do social distancing. But guess how many people have died to date during the whole pandemic in Taiwan? 7. As many people as you can stack in a minivan going down Central Expressway. And so the next time your viewers see a minivan, think, oh, that's how many people have died in a country of 24 million people.
That now is, I'm going to
tell you. Yes, and I'm going to tell you why that's the situation. It's the situation also in Japan. 121 million people in Japan. They've had less than 1,000 people die during the whole pandemic. Singapore, only 12 people have died in the whole country during the whole pandemic. Iceland, well, that's not possible according to what we're being told in the mainstream media, but that's reality. Anyone can look it up. You can even look at the Johns Hopkins COVID website and you'll see those numbers. They're hidden in there, but I'm pointing them out because the people in Texas need to hear good news. In Dallas, they need to hear good news, and I have good news.
I'm sure you do. Before I'm blown away by those numbers. I gave up trying to write them down. But you're going to tell us somehow eventually where we get to this point that in these other countries,
they're doing what I'm doing, Debbie.
Okay.
They're doing what I'm doing, which is not hydroxychloroquine, although that works. And so what they're doing is an inhaled steroid. And so my silver bullet is inhaled budesonide. The brand name originally was Pulmicort. Now it's generic. It's super cheap. It's about $200 for the total treatment if you pay cash. With insurance, many of my patients are not even having to pay for it. And you use a nebulizer machine. It's an asthma medicine. It's a respiratory anti-inflammatory for COVID, which is a respiratory inflammatory disease. And it works. 100% of my patients are alive. I've been treating this since March. And you use it for 5 minutes. So it takes 5 minutes to do a breathing treatment. You plug it in the machine in the wall. You put the medicine that's pre-mixed, pre-measured from the pharmacy into the little reservoir. You push the on button and you breathe it during 5 minutes during the commercial.
You just have a mask in your face and breathe.
You don't even
it.
Have to have a mask. You can use a little mouthpiece that you hold in front of you.
Okay.
And you breathe it for 5 minutes. And And I have, let me tell you what I've heard from patients when I started using this. They tell me, I feel better during the first treatment. And so their chest pain goes away. Their shortness of breath goes away. Their fever breaks. I'll give you an example. I have a patient who has two kinds of cancer. She calls me after 5 days of being flat on her back in the house, in the bed, can't get out of bed, fever won't break for 5 days. She says, I heard you on the radio, and would you please help me? It's on a Friday. She says, my granddaughter tested positive today, and I think I have it. And I said, I'm sure you do with all the symptoms you're describing. She is currently fighting two forms of lymphoma. Mm. She's on chemotherapy right now. She just had radiation a month before for the lymphoma. She should die, according to what you hear from the CDC and World Health Organization. But I gave her that treatment that night. In the morning, her fever had broke. She had her first good night's sleep. Over the weekend, she recovers. On Monday, she works an 8-hour day. She still is fighting cancer, two forms of cancer, but she's cured of COVID. She's symptom-free. She has her two consecutive negative tests. That's a cure.
Okay, can you say the name of the drug again?
Budesonide.
Budesonide. And so is it done in an inhaler?
It's an inhaler. And so it does actually come as an inhaler, but I'm using it in a nebulizer machine. You know, you see preschool kids use this. It's safe that it's so safe. It's been out for over 20 years.
Now I'm going to share something with you. It's an article. And I've written this in response to what I see from my perspective are the lies and the deceits within the entirety of the medical industrial complex. That means your pharmaceutical companies, your hospitals, your insurance companies, and legislators. Oh, we want universal health care. Yeah, and then one side, the Democrats say, we want it. And then the Republicans say, but we can't afford it. It'll bankrupt us. They are both wrong. Now, mind you, the information I'm about to share, I sent to all the leading Democratic and Republican politicians. And we sent it to Rachel Maddow. We sent it out everywhere. Nobody responded. This article is entitled, A Revolution in American Medicine is Long Overdue, by Richard Gill and myself. Please download it. Please share it with as many people as possible, including every legislator that you can think of, because that's the level this has to get to. The sweeping occurrence of COVID-19 infections has contributed to a loss of jobs, careers, regular education for our children, and has adversely impacted the health of otherwise healthy people. But for tens of millions of Americans who have lost their health insurance or have not been covered, the situation is even more dire. One illness, one infectious disease, could push them over the edge into insolvency and bankruptcy. Now is the opportune time to change course, bail out all Americans, and cease providing taxpayer gifts to Wall Street, the rich, and the powerful. The fundamental problem with Obamacare and the proposed combination of a Green New Deal and Medicare for All is that both, meaning all your leading Democrats, including Bernie Sanders, and the Republicans, they've been told, they've accepted, they must leave this excessive profit-making in the system. The medical lobbies, the insurance and hospital industries, and Big Pharma assure that if you're hospitalized with COVID-19 and don't have insurance, you will receive a bill of tens of thousands of dollars. There is no power that I'm aware of in the United States at this moment that would prevent these private industries, meaning your doctors, your hospitals, your hedge funds, everyone involved, Big Pharma, from foregoing what amounts to a $3.5 trillion windfall profit every single year. Therefore, the Democrats who claim they want universal health care want it only under the condition that the existing system is not upended. Nothing changes. Oh, they'll harp at some drug that's overpriced, but when was the last time you saw them mandate a law controlling the price of drugs? You haven't. Yet that's exactly what is demanded at this moment. If there is one demonstration we must have, because it impacts everyone and it concerns life and death in this moment, and has for the last 50 years, and has caused us at least 40 million deaths alone, it is we have a completely failed healthcare system at every level. It's failed us, but it's been extremely profitable for the people who control it. So the onslaught of misinformation from the corporatist wings of both political parties and the media biases against universal health care are obviously confusing the electorate. This confusion leaves citizens bewildered about how they will pay their bills unless a fundamental overhaul of medical insurance is undertaken. More important, what will happen if you are diagnosed with a serious illness and are not fully covered? You know, we all know. What are your chances of joining the ranks of 530,000 families that file bankruptcy annually for medical reasons, and that's likely to go to over 1 million starting now? According to a study published by the American Journal of Public Health, 66.5% of all bankruptcies are medically related. In the past, it was rare for people to go bankrupt because they did not have accessible medical care. There was a time in the United States when medicine carried a higher standard of ethics. The Hippocratic Oath was respected, and no one was denied medical care because they could not afford it. But that was in the past. Obama's Affordable Care Act, written entirely by the insurance industry, in fact, later, Freedom of Information Act requests found hundreds of visits by the leading heads of the pharmaceutical and insurance industries and for-profit hospital industries to the White House. They wrote it all. Legislators had nothing to do with. So this is an utterly corrupt bill from top to bottom, no matter how it's gift-wrapped, no matter what praise is given to it. It failed because it left all the profit in the system and allowed them to increase profit and still deny almost 20 million Americans any health care. So what we have to understand is this. Joe Biden continues to believe that Obamacare is a successful piece of legislation, and it's done little to mitigate the increasing financial burden on individuals and families. In fact, quality of health care has steadily declined. Now, with the COVID-19 pandemic, we are witnessing patients forced to pay out of pocket enormous bills for diagnostic testing, emergency room visits, hospitalization, and treatments. If you're returning to the country from overseas, you may be forced to pay for the time spent in quarantine, even if you test negative for the virus. And the pharmaceutical and insurance industries are already capitalizing on this disaster. The Democratic Party's full-throttle assault to undermine the legitimacy of Bernie Sanders' campaign was orchestrated by the insurance and medical industrial complex, which has influenced unbridled bias across the media waves. The goal was to effectively sustain Obamacare's failed health care efforts. After listening to dozens of commentators on CNN, MSNBC, Fox, and the pseudo-health journalists at the New York Times and Washington Post, the false impression was created to perceive Bernie as only offering free stuff to everyone at enormous cost to taxpayers. That simply wasn't true. No one truly knows how much a national universal program would cost. Forecasts for a 10-year period range roughly from $13 trillion to $48 trillion. Well, one thing is certain. The math is simple. You'd be extremely expensive if you had to pay it out of your own pocket for any of this. But if it's under universal health care and the profit is left in, it will be extremely expensive for everyone because we'd have to pay for it. And that's where we seem to be going. One group opposed to it and the other group supporting it. However, perhaps this is the wrong approach and the wrong argument. And it's based upon the Democratic Party's deep-seated cognitive dissonance to protect the vested interests of Wall Street's financial community, which is their community, Biden's allegiance to the credit lending industry, the credit card companies, the military industrial complex, and the pharmaceutical and agrochemical industries. In effect, the entirety of corporate America and the deep state its lobbyists and its oligarchical billionaires and their sounding board in the mainstream media are on one side of the scale, while the urgent humanitarian medical needs of the average citizen are on the other. Guess who wins? Just take a guess. You have every major industry. You have all the banks. You have all of Wall Street. You have all the oligarchs. You have all these people who control everything. And they're on one side. And you and your illness, you're on the other side. They win. But it doesn't have to be that way. Not at all. All that weighs on the side of Medicare for all are all the educated adults, unionists, working people, and those who understand climate change and the need for a comprehensive and equitable healthcare system. This still remains to be a revolution. It is still not on the street. No one's demonstrating. Not a single march, not a single demonstration, not a single placard. Nowhere. And yet this is life and death. And it must take place, must take place now. So how does such a revolution get started? First, Medicare for all is doable. And not only doable, extremely affordable. In fact, our research and scholarship can show that we can potentially save $1.7 trillion every year. That's what we're going to save. Theirs will cost an additional $2 trillion a year. So it's a huge difference. Why? Because we're removing the equation from the unnecessary and unconscionable profit to private insurance providers, the drug makers, and the large mega hospital networkers. There's no reason for having so many levels of bureaucracy between direct medical care and the patient. In France, they don't. In England, they don't. In Italy, they don't. In Canada, they don't. You walk into a hospital, you get treated, you sign your name, you walk out, that's it. There's no reason for having this happen here unless it's for profit. Every industry directly involved in providing treatment and care would continue to profit. However, and this is the caveat, it would be based upon what an educated group of consumer experts and economists would decide is a legitimate profit. Let's say 100% profit over a drug. So if a drug costs them a dollar, they could sell it for two. Right now, a drug costs $10, they can sell it for $500 or $5,000. That's what would come out. $1 trillion in insurance bureaucracy, paperwork would come out. But it would be reasonable for them to have a profit, but a reasonable profit. Instead, we have a medical lobby that is excessively greedy. Thousands are involved, and they're eager to take advantage of loopholes in order to milk the system for whatever it's worth. But we can only have a viable Medicare for all after we seriously look at what it costs to treat a patient and make efforts to reduce the exorbitant waste that has been programmed into our current system. How is it that a hospital can charge $787 for an adult, $393 for a child, for a $1 bag of intravenous saline solution? Plus, when the nurse hooks you up to it, which takes about 30 seconds, another $127. So you're almost up to $1,000 for a $1 bag. Americans spend more on prescription medication than any other developed nation. We're overdrugged. And as drug prices soar 10 times the rate of inflation, Daraprim, D-A-R-A-P-R-I-M, for example, which is prescribed to fight one of the world's most common parasitical infections that causes toxoplasmosis, can cost $45,000 a month, $750 for one single pill. So we looked into it. It cost the manufacturer $13.50 to manufacture that pill. So what if we charged 100, gave them 100% profit? So now they're making what? They're making a nice profit, but not an exorbitant profit. When we consider the cost of treating COVID-19, the figures get even more outrageous. An average Medicare payment for a common respiratory infection is $13,300. and over 40,000 for an infection requiring a ventilator. That was in 2017. The average cost has increased 20% or more in less than 3 years. Average out-of-pocket costs for being hospitalized for pneumonia is $1,300. Remember, that's out of your pocket, and higher for those covered by small business insurance. Cases of uninsured people being treated for COVID-19 have received medical bills upwards of $35,000. As if there is no irony, a person's out of work, they've lost their job, they don't have health insurance. Where are they supposed to come up with $35,000? Because that $35,000 could be $70,000 within 2 years based upon compounding interest, and then they turned it over to a collection agency that hounds you day and night. All because politicians like Joe Biden and Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, and on the Republican side, they all take money from Big Pharma. And so therefore, they become silent on reform. Consequently, only 1 in 7 Americans polled would not seek COVID treatment because of the cost. Based upon earlier figures between 2012 and 15, about $2.6 trillion, can be saved by removing bureaucratic waste and profiteering. This includes $275 billion every year on private insurance paperwork, just the paperwork, $55.6 billion on liability insurance, $471 billion on insurance billing, $140 billion on Medicare medical fraud, $210 billion for unnecessary medical testing, $190 billion for wasteful administration services. In fact, the British Medical Journal reported that medical error is the third leading cause of death in the United States. As a result, over $1 trillion is spent on avoidable medical errors. Universal health care will not break the economy. What is breaking the economy is our current broken medical system. The paradigm is flawed, except for the people who control it. Universal quality care is easily within reach, but only after the health of the population is given preference over the healthcare industry's vulture capitalists. Then Americans can no longer have to worry about bankruptcy, which further contributes to the stresses associated with ill health because they can't afford the treatments or medications without putting themselves and their families into perpetual debt. Second, providing universal health care does not guarantee that patients will receive quality care. So if you get bad cancer treatment and more people can now take the bad cancer treatment, you're going to find more people dying from the treatment. The same with heart disease and statins, the same with psychiatric drugs. So we have a really bad chronic care industry. It fails miserably, and people die because of it. So if we're truly honest about with ourselves and ask whether the U.S. has the best medical care available, the answer is a resounding no, we do not. American emergency medicine is the best in the world. It's exemplary, as is specialized surgery. However, that's only about 12% of medicine. That leaves 88% of chronic care, treating heart disease, cancer, diabetes, pain management, neurological and mental health conditions, are dismal failures. More physicians need to be brought into the system without the anxiety of paying off enormous school debt and being forced to work to exhaustion. We would be wise to make medical education free in return for young doctors committing themselves to charging reasonable fees that would be oversold by an independent group if they wish to remain within the system. If a doctor prefers gouging patients, that is their right to do so outside of the national system. And finally, the U.S. lags far behind in implementing a national preventative program. Little to nothing has been done to prevent diseases shown to be directly related to lifestyle and diet and toxic conditions in our environment or stress. A viable preventative program would begin by supporting and mandating holistic health programs in our schools, beginning with grade school. Why does offering school courses in how to be healthy seem absurd when it's been shown repeatedly in the scientific peer-reviewed literature and efforts in other advanced nations to avoid preventable illnesses and further reduce medical costs? But in order to launch a comprehensive preventative program at a national scale, only respected, educated health consumers should be in charge. Every entity representing any private corporate interest should be prohibited, since they are responsible for the medical disasters that now demand for universal health care. If Obamacare and the current corporate medical establishment were truly effective, there'd be no need even for discussion of Medicare for All. Hence, this program would save nearly $2 trillion a year and help prevent tens of millions of diseases. The nation would be much healthier if comprehensive measures were taken to prevent disease in the first place. And during the past 3 years, we have sent, on multiple occasions, suggestions of implementing a Medicare for All to the Sanders campaign and leading Democrats in Congress, but not a single person has responded. What does that tell you about the sincerity and commitment for those who profess universal health care, but get their funding and marching orders from the medical industrial complex? I'm Gary Noll, and that's our commentary for today. Just a quick little news update. Do you remember when Anthony Fauci and all the media said that, oh, this hydroxychloroquine was dangerous, shouldn't take it, it was worthless? Well, that was not true. In fact, three separate studies just came out this week, and they showed that the death rate when people were taking the drug hydroxychloroquine and zinc was 0.5%. Another study showed that you could reduce the death rate from COVID virus by 50%, and that was at the Henry Ford Medical Center out in Detroit. And another one says 99.3% outpatient survival rate, 99.3% outpatient, meaning people who have the COVID virus when hydroxychloroquine and zinc or an antibiotic were taken. It just shows that we relied to. The question is why? Why aren't they paying attention to drugs that are off patent and very inexpensive? Well, then that's your answer. Because Anthony Fauci is nothing except the best friend of Big Pharma and Bill Gates, and they're all into money. And that's why they want us to have the vaccine when we have something that could cure the virus now. And two negative tests after you've been tested positive shows you've been cured. In any case, more on that on upcoming programs. We just want to tell you that we were ahead of this curve and we're going to stay ahead of it. But a major issue that comes up is every show has a way of laying out what message it wants to share with its audience. And a lot of people, especially older people, they just want to hear health information. And I would love just to be able to do health information. Boy, it would be a lot easier and a lot less time consuming. And I remember once it was almost 2 o'clock in the morning and I was sitting in my office and I heard a horn outside my window, and I looked down and there's a person, and he says that he worked at a local, evidently he's a police officer, and he said, "What are you doing here so late? Every time I come by late at night, you're there." And I said, "Well, Richard Gale's on the other side and I'm on this side, and we're doing a lot of research on an important issue. I wouldn't have to do any of that. I could be out enjoying my evenings like everyone else or in bed." But here's what it means. Health is very important because it impacts every person. It doesn't matter what your ideology, doesn't matter whether you're an atheist or believe in a God. All of us have a certain finite amount of time on this earth. We'd like to get through that time without disease and suffering and pain and infirmary, loss of cognition, loss of muscle. But because of the choices we make, more often than not, dictated by special interest group, drink this beverage, eat this. If you're going to, you know, be a person watching baseball and football, you got to have this beer. And so one day you don't sit down with the family and have a good meal. You're eating outside. You're eating fast food and junk food. And then one day, instead of being lean and wiry and healthy, you're overweight. Now you have diseases. You're a kid and you have diseases of adulthood, adult diabetes, and arthritis and heart disease. Many children today will not outlive their parents. So we have been programmed. The old Edward Bernay, the father of American propaganda, has been a master in how people have programmed our minds to make bad choices. You almost never see people making good choices, not by the media. So if I'm going to deal with health, as some people suggest, what should I exclude? How about doing no more investigation on 5G? But we've done 11 stories. Not helping to ban DDT, as I did for over 6 years. And there was a small, tiny group of us because the person who wrote Silent Spring, Rachel Carson, she wasn't able to go all across America. But we did. And so it got banned in 1972. How about over 50 other items that got banned because we were on top of it and promoted? How about helping the 3.6 million Vietnam vets get some compensation from the government because we did over 100 broadcasts and articles on Agent Orange with Paul Rudishan, one of the Gulf vets, or one of the Vietnam vets? But we did. We helped 3.6 million vets. And how about all the programs on building up your immune system, detoxification, alternative approaches if you had Gulf War syndrome and you had Agent Orange poisoning or you had environmental poisoning? We did those. But that's not about health. That's not like eating carrots and broccoli, because you have to go after industries. You have to show the truth. You have to show we've been lied to. So we did about low-level radiation. It's harmless. No, it's not. Depleted uranium. We were the first to break that story. We did 3 award-winning documentaries on it. But no one else did, to show you what's wrong when a GI gets a shot in Iraq, doesn't even go to the theater and ends up with Gulf War syndrome. Or someone in the theater comes back and now they've got leukemia without being told that the munitions they're working in and with, their bullets and bombs, are made from depleted uranium. And it's not depleted in their body. And what about the Dicon Shield and Copper Coral 7? What about all the different ways that women have been abused and their bodies used? We did the most important investigative reporting series on the fraud of the synthetic hormone replacement therapy, increasing the risk of breast cancer, heart disease, colorectal cancer, dementia, and stroke by 13%. That means 1.3 million women bodies are sacrificed at the altar of the medical industrial complex every year. We fought, and a lot of women today are not using synthetic hormone replacement therapy, but natural therapies because of that fight. But it was a battle. I've had over 300 battles in my career, 300. We broke the original story on alternative cancer therapies. They were being destroyed. I got a program on 60 Minutes when I met with Don Hewlett. I got a program when I met with Judy Moses at 2020, won 2 Emmys, exposing the corruption that was thrown against Dr. Brzezinski, who had a successful treatment for cancer, still does. But he would have been dead in the water back then. Now imagine this. Imagine that you wanted to get an alternative therapy because you tried orthodox therapy and it didn't work. There was a time in America where every single doctor, every single man and woman practicing medicine who was helping their patients with alternative therapy was under attack. They were going to prison, like Dr. Privatira, or they were losing their medical license, of which there were over 100. We fought for them. We lobbied for them. We created a law that took us 5 years. We got it passed New York State. Then it became the template for other states, including California, a freedom of information, a Freedom of Practice Act. Where as long as you had informed consent, the doctor could use any therapy and the doctor could not go to jail or be attacked. We did that. Without that, there wouldn't be a single holistic doctor in the United States because they'd be in jail or lose their license. We literally saved all of complementary and alternative medicine, all of it. Now, whether you choose to look at it or you don't care about alternative medicine, wouldn't it be nice if you needed it, you would have it. You would have a homeopathy. We saved the entire profession of chiropractic. That is a matter of record. On the articles. Do your homework before you become critical. Let's bring on Richard Gale. Richard, give us your perspective on this issue that what people don't like, they don't want anyone else to hear about.
You know what I was thinking of, Gary, also is, and just maybe it's just so for the listeners, those that listen to us regularly to kind of understand, is that it's not just the radio broadcast that we do every weekday at noon and then Tuesday evenings. There's also our film documentaries that we're doing. And there's this kind of a interesting symbiotic or synergistic relationship between the two. you know, very often when we are doing a film, we may not know who, this particular person is that we're filming who's going to be speaking on GMOs or somebody dealing with climate change. Or we bring them on the radio at times, and this is our way to kind of screen them, too, with what they know, especially if it's a new face that we're not familiar with. So there is this kind of a relationship. And even though our broadcasting is a form of activism because we are getting a voice out, I think it's important to also look at documentary films are a very powerful form of constructive activism. The Nazi Party realized this, Franklin Roosevelt, he realized this, and we don't recognize how much films such as Frank Capra's film that he did on behalf of the war effort called Why We Fight. It was back in when that was like 1942 or something. These were activist films. Casablanca, 30 Seconds Over Tokyo, even Charlie Chaplin's film The Great Dictator. These were kind of propaganda films, but they also served an activist cause. Now, we're not trying to do propaganda. We are doing more in terms of grassroots activism. And so to be able to look at what we've been able to accomplish through our films over the decades, just to think of the numerous groups and organizations and at the grassroots levels that have taken our films on GMOs, the film The Seeds of Death, or the Knocking on the Devil's Door, which was to bring attention to the corruption of the nuclear power industry. These films have been used by these different grassroots groups as means of education. They've been shown in auditoriums and public libraries or community halls and small theaters or at organizational meetings. So many of these films have been used for that. When we did The Seeds of Death, that film was at the time, there was only one other very good film. It was called The World According to Monsanto. In fact, I think we had that woman director. She was a French woman. We had her on the show. So that was the only film that had existed at that time dealing with Monsanto and GMOs. But that film was used by the supporters of the California bill for the labeling of GMOs. I'm trying to give a much larger, broader picture on how our work is also works at these very important grassroots levels, because that's how things get done. Also with that film, it was for the Knocking on the Devil's Door that contributed to the protests that you had organized in front of the governor's mansion in Manhattan, bringing together the hydrofracking communities as well. So it's a dual thing. We've been doing numerous films and just on the pharmaceutical industry, The Death by Medicine and The War on Health are two films of a kind. I don't know of any other films that have been produced that so thoroughly deals with the problems of iatrogenic medical injuries and the corruption of the FDA. They're one of a kind. There's four documentaries that were done on vaccines. Yes, everybody's heard us deal with many programs on the broadcast dealing with vaccines. But in addition to that, we had composed a 100-page white paper that was submitted to Governor Patterson and New York Health Commissioner to try to put a halt on the mandating of the swine flu, the H1N1 vaccine that was they were trying to mandate with healthcare workers and nurses. When we do this kind of work, it also feeds in and helps with our broadcasting and films that we're working on. So people need to see this. This is a very much of a holistic kind of an operation that we engage in. And so maybe not everything gets said over the airwaves. However, alongside that, other things are being done that are feeding to the information that you receive over the air. The films that you've done on AIDS, AIDS Inc. in particular, there's no other film at that time. There was no other film that was really like that. As you mentioned, there was all the work that we've done on veterans efforts. There was Killing Our Own, films on Gulf War syndrome. People like Major Doug Roeke has educated tens of thousands of veterans through those by distributing those films and showing those films to his students at the university and whatnot. over the years, people have known we've been big supporters of the Green Party, Ralph Nader, Jill Stein, Charlene Spretnak, who is one of the founders, original founders of the Green Party. They've all been regular guests on the show. So we play, and then all the programs we've done just on the American Empire, Libya, U.S.-Saudi relations, the strike in Palestine and Gaza, Ukraine, Syria, Venezuela, Brazil, and as well as the historical programs on JFK, Martin Luther King, Gandhi, nefarious CIA activities. So these are just many. It goes even, what we've been covering goes well beyond also health, although all these different issues that we bring up in some way, directly or indirectly, do have an impact on our health and our well-being, particularly our psychological well-being. So it's just some things that we share.
Our latest study shows that the average listener is a 37-year-old college-educated woman listening at night who is very much in want of information concerning how to be more progressive and get results on social issues and on the issues that the mainstream media and other types of even liberal media have not touched upon. In conclusion, Richard, and thank you for that insight, our program is designed to empower people whenever there's an issue that needs to be addressed. So if it's global warming, we have the documentaries and the commentaries and the articles and the guests. We've done more broadcasting on environmental issues than any other radio program in America. So if it's just on health alone, imagine what would happen if we did not address the plight of the chiropractors and going after the American Medical Association, which we did and allowed chiropractic to survive and thrive. Also, what we did to show that we should have the right to take our supplements, the DSHEA's Act, that's now law. That's why you're allowed to take supplements. And also, you're allowed to see alternative doctors. Whatever therapy that you want to take with a doctor, you have the right. All of these would have been devoid in our workplace today because they were all attempts by Big Pharma to destroy, along with the FDA, your rights of freedom of choice. So you see, talking about health without talking about the underlying political and powerful economic interests that want to deprive you of your healthy choices, because you can't be a healthy person making healthy choices, having a healthy lifestyle, and at the same time following the dictates of those who advertise on television, radio, and newspaper, magazines, and on the media that give you misinformation and unhealthy information. So I'm happy for the hundreds of thousands of people we've worked with one-on-one and the millions of people through radio and books and PBS stations on the larger mission messages. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.